The following program is paid for by its sponsors, who are solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are not necessarily the views of WMAL.
The information provided on Dr. Tom Rozelle Live by Dr. Tom Rozelle, D.C., interview guests, show co-hosts, or substitute hosts is not intended or implied to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. It is for general information purposes only. Information from this broadcast should not replace the appropriate consultation and examination process by a licensed physician. Always consult your own physician prior to changing any current medical directive or prescription.
Welcome, everybody. This is Dr. Tom Rozelle. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live. It's an amazing afternoon, one that we can go out. I think the rain stopped. It's all gone. And a little cloud cover, but, you know, get out and enjoy yourself. Get that exercise that you need to have. Just go for a walk. And remember that if you're out there walking before the program's over, you take me with you. Put the headset on. Listen to us. And we have a very special program today, one that has to do with why we hurt so much in all of our joints, one that, limits everything that we do, one that if we go to the doctor and he says you have chronic arthritic pain, that it's like a death knell. You don't want to do anything else with your world. Well, we're here to tell you that there's so much that can be addressed that will reverse that and make things better. We're going to talk about the triggering mechanisms. We're going to talk about damage. And who are we? Who am I talking about? Well, none other than the professor, Dr. Harlan Browning. And he and I will co-present this Wednesday evening at the Rozelle Center for Healing, the 15th. If you'd like to join us, it's real simple. Go online at rozellecare.com. That's rozellecare.com, rozellecare.com. And it says register live event. Click it. And we'll save a seat for you. But remember that those of you who've been to some of our in-house programs, we are over the top full, and we don't want to say, I'm sorry, we don't have room for you. So please make sure that you register. Now, with the time change today, I know a lot of you are sleepy, but it's going to be lighter outside, so there's no problem with driving. So join us, or if you want to do it by phone, you know, the old-fashioned way, like I do a lot of things, call 703-698-7117. But let's get on with what we're talking about. Hey, Dr. Browning, how you doing? Welcome to the program.
Good. How are you, Tom? Always good to be with you.
I know, as always. It's always fun to go back and forth with you because, you know, your knowledge base is one that I'm always in admiration of. But, you know, this Wednesday evening, we're going to be talking about something that really is problematic for so many people. It can be extraordinarily damaging and destructive of lifestyles and so forth. You know, let's start with, you know, if we had to define, and we could just do that for a second so we can focus people a little bit. If we had to define what an arthritic condition is, and without going, we're going to go into the next piece of, you know, the different types, but what really is arthritis?
Well, for the most part, when we talk about arthritis, we're referring to osteoarthritis, which is a degenerative form of arthritis, meaning that the cartilage in a joint, and it can happen in any joint, your back, your knees, your hips, progressively degrades and breaks down. In response, the body tries to help out by causing inflammation and forming scar tissue. But unfortunately, that usually just causes a progression in the disorder. And sometimes it can take years and years and years, or for some folks, especially after an injury, they can go from having no arthritis to having a good bit in maybe a year and a half.
Wow, that's fast progression to the point where they're good to go and then they're not anymore. Let's talk about that. Let's start there because there's so many different types of arthritic problems. You know, we can sit there and list, you know, from osteoarthritis, which we're beginning to talk about, and rheumatoid and gouty arthritis and psoriatic arthritis, and, you know, where some people get bacterial infections and the joints begin to fuse, the ankylosing patterns and so forth and so on. But let's start here. And you say injury. Now, is it just an injury where somebody, for example, had a car accident or fall, or what are we talking about relative to the body's perception of injury?
Yeah, it certainly can be an acute injury situation like you referenced, like an automobile accident or maybe a significant slip and fall. But to be honest with you, I see much more people nowadays that have arthritic changes and they can't put their finger on a single event that started the process. So I think that, you know, day-to-day living for some people is destructive to their joints, most likely because they're inactive and they're not well conditioned and they sit too much. So that just puts us in a bad place. And then, you know, time takes its toll. And then by the, you know, by the time they get an x-ray, they might have, you know, some significant changes in the joint space.
So in other words, if you don't use it, you lose it.
Pretty much. Yeah. And then obviously there's a sequelae around it. Not only is the joint deteriorating, but the soft tissues that surrounds it, the ligaments, the tendons, the muscles, those become progressively atrophied. They get weaker and kind of we get caught up in this wheel.
Just a loop like a gerbil, huh?
Yeah, basically like a gerbil on a wheel, exactly, going nowhere fast.
So let me ask you a question. Some people, you know, end up with all kinds of damage and irritation, but they don't suffer the consequences, the sequela of this joint damage. Other things, maybe injury to, you know, neurological signaling, maybe reactive problems in other parts of the body. Is there, does everybody, because of injury patterns, a car accident, slip and fall, too fat, too this, too that, will everybody get arthritic conditions, or does there have to be an underlying predisposition that would cause that osteoarthritis, that joint space breakdown, to begin to set in and occur?
You know, I think it's safe to say that from an aging standpoint, most of us are going to get arthritis. Now, the extent of that is different from individual to individual. You know, the reality is just some people are chronically more inflamed than others, and maybe that's partially hereditary, partially diet. And there's certainly people whose immune system is not as responsive to repair. And that's probably the most important component. When we injure any tissue, be it a cartilage or bone or ligament or tendon, organs, the body goes in there and it tries to stabilize it, first of all, to prevent the progression of the problem. And then it goes in to clean it up and heal it. And some folks, instead of putting down healthy tissue, it lays down scar tissue in this haphazard manner. And it doesn't do the finishing work on the back end. So that small injury for one person can turn into scar tissue that causes them to progress to a more advanced form of arthritis.
You know, it's interesting. You see people walk in to the practice and they have all kinds of issues. And, you know, obviously you're correct. As people get older, they seem to present with more damage. And I think it's based on, you know, what I've seen and obviously what's happened to me over a period of years, there's accumulation of damage that occurs, and then as the body breaks down, meaning immune system's not working the way it's supposed to, we don't kick in the good anti-inflammatories and then stop them from moving forward. That it's, you know, sometimes they don't want to stop. But when you look at dietary patterns, when you look at repetitive injuries, but when you look at medications and you look at exposures as well, things that are on there, my opinion, I think it sets the stage for somebody who ends up with major damage to their body. They can't move. They no longer can grab anything. Their hands are gnarled, and the like. I'll give you an example. You know, my mother, for example, was a hairdresser, and she spent a lot of years. She was a platform artist, and she was a great stylist. But over the years, you saw her hands begin to form large knots and distortions in her hands and so forth. And it seems to her, she, instead of moving the chair when she was, doing something with somebody, she would bend her body and she developed a curvature. But it's that whole pattern worsened over the years, and where she had a huge loss of flexibility within her spine and her joints, her hands particularly, they were a mess. Now, when you have somebody like that, all hairdressers don't end up that way. They have problems, but they don't seem to go to that end. What would be the distinguishing features of somebody who, you know, they're in the same occupation, they're doing the same type of thing? You and I were bent over treatment tables and have been for many, many years, and that's going to cause a postural distortion. There are people who, you know, are sitting at a desk and they're always turning to one side because that's where all their information is, their screens and the like. But some people end up in really bad shape and some people don't. Why? What's the distinguishing features?
Yeah. So in reference to your mom, you know, somebody who develops kind of a global arthritic presentation. In other words, we're getting arthritis in small joints, big joints, you know, the spine. I would suspect that there's probably a genetic component to that. Now, having said that, that doesn't mean it's a death sentence where it's going to definitively happen. You got to remember, and as you know, that our environment triggers genes to either turn on and off. Now, there's good genes and there's bad genes. So lifestyle, as far as diet and the way we take care of ourselves has a huge impact. So if there's a pretty strong family history of having arthritis, then it's probably safe to say that you need to watch those factors that you could control that might certainly prevent that arthritis from being triggered and doing its thing and acting on, multiple parts of your body.
You know, I'm going to get into this when we teach on Wednesday evening. I'm going to talk about the triggering mechanisms that have to do with viral patterns and bacterium and so forth. But in your opinion, we have this thing called COVID. I'm not going to get into that right now because I hit on that nasty boy every program. But I'll do that on Wednesday evening. I'll talk to people about that. How often do you think that because of the exposures to things like Epstein-Barr and cytomegalovirus and herpes and, the list goes on, how often do we see that as an underlying predisposing pattern to joint space breakdown and degeneration that is triggered by something else? Are we kind of shooting off the block here, or is that something that's really real?
I would say that research is certainly bearing out that those, clinical, subclinical infections, so to speak, these are viruses and things that typically don't kill us, but they can make us feel sick, or maybe we don't have any symptoms at all. That sets up an immune response. So if we're sabotaging our immune system because we're fighting in the background a virus, Epstein-Barr being one of them, or cytomegalia, then the body will haphazardly do things, maybe in a hastily fashion. And that might mean that we start to become chronically inflamed, or we start to present with these changes in our joint function and ultimately get arthritis.
Doc, when somebody presents themselves and they say that my doctor said that I have rheumatoid arthritis, RA, and I want to get into this because we're coming up to a break and we're not going to be able to get into it as depth as I want to, but I want you to think about it until we come back. And they, obviously they have some joint space problems and they're not showing the Heberden nodes, but the rheumatologist is saying, you got rheumatoid. And then I go through and I treat them and we deal with very specific factors. And all of a sudden that joint space flexibility, that return of function comes back. And what I want to do is, when I want to talk about is when we come back after the break, is are they missing the boat? Are they just using a canopy and saying, well, you have rheumatoid because there's a shift in some type of immune markers? Or are there very specific, not just characteristics, because they can be blunted, but are there very specific laboratory findings that would say this is rheumatoid for sure, absolutely 100%, which is a problem? Anyway, we're coming up to a break. My guest today, Dr. Harlan Browning, the professor. He and I will be co-teaching this Wednesday evening, the 15th, at the Results Center for Healing. We'll tell you more about that when we come back. Welcome back, everybody. This is Dr. Tom Rozelle. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live. Interesting program today. We're talking about your joints and why you can't move and you hurt so much and why you're so stiff. And, what we're talking about is arthritic conditions, which is the topic of our in-house continuing education program this coming Wednesday, the 15th at 6 p.m. at the Rozelle Center for Healing in Fairfax. If you'd like to attend it, real simple, go to rozellecare.com, rozellecare.com. And scroll down, you'll see the ad for it. Push the button, register now. But please do me a favor. Register, give us a way to make sure that we can confirm with you. But also, if you're not going to attend, something happens, please call us, because we have a packed house. And we have to make sure that we have room for everybody. We want to prepare for everybody. But what the exciting part for me, I get to co-teach with Dr. Harlan Browning, who is my guest today, and we're talking about arthritic problems and arthritic degeneration. Hey, Dr. Harlan, welcome back. Let's get into it a little bit more. I left you with a thought process before the program. How do you distinguish between, a rheumatoid pattern and osteoarthritis? My doc told me I have rheumatoid. how do we know that, in fact, it's absolutely without doubt rheumatoid opposed to some other type of arthritic condition?
Well, for the most part, when you're looking at rheumatoid or any of the other autoimmune arthritic conditions, there's definitely some laboratory markers that are pretty definitive that the person has that diagnosis. Now, having said that, there's a lot of people who have chronic pain syndromes, and I almost think we should talk Wednesday night not so much about arthritic pain, but just joint pain, because arthritic pain really pigeonholes us to pain that's associated with deterioration of the joint. Well, we can get referral to the joint. We can get inflammatory patterns in the joint. So, you know, we want to look at the big picture, and RA is definitely a part of it, but there's a lot of people who have elevated markers, and there's one called an ANA, anti-nuclear antibody, that is nonspecific for autoimmune issues. So people will present with one that's out of normal range, but maybe the other markers of autoimmunity are within range. So this is the gray area. So the person doesn't really get a diagnosis. They have the symptoms, and you know, the doctor will, in most cases, treat it symptomatically, anti-inflammatories and those types of things.
So when you know, when you're talking about ANA, as you said, it's very nonspecific, because they'll run that in conjunction with people who they suspect have other immunological responses like Sjogren's and lupus and so forth, which all can cause joint pain, all can cause an inflammatory reaction. And if you have an underlying something, it's going to show up. But I agree with you. Let's get into, you know, we'll do that on Wednesday evening. We'll get into the referral joint our presentation that presents like an arthritic condition that may or may not be that. You know, the good news, in my opinion, other than if there's frank destruction of bone where you no longer have any buffering in there, you can reverse so much of this, particularly in today's world. And, but let's, you know, there was a term that I came across recently and that I hadn't seen before. And I'm going to kind of jog your brain. It's called reactive arthritis. What does that mean?
You know, I don't know. That's an interesting term. I mean, how are they applying it?
Well, they were saying that it's, you know, and the reason I threw it out there is because it's very much what we were just talking about. It's a arthritic problem that seems to be triggered by an infection in another part of the body. And what they were saying is that it was a result of often infections within the intestinal tract or the genital urinary tract. And I never heard it described. I knew what they were talking about, but I never heard them describe it that way. And when you know, you get into looking at that and what it really is, some of them are finger pointing that it can be autoimmune, but they said, no, it's really an infection. So that leads you to some of the work that they've came out of Saudi Arabia with during COVID, that when there was if people who got COVID, but particularly people who had the vaccines and so forth, they activated, if you will, underlying dormant levels of Epstein-Barr, cytomegalovirus, and so forth, causing that arthritic condition. But in fact, the inflammatory characteristics of it were significant and caused a lot of swelling and redness and the heat and the pain that we often associate with autoimmune, you know, conditions, particularly what we were just talking about was rheumatoid, right? So, you know, it caught me by surprise as well. I was saying, what are they talking about? What is reactive? And there's one that you and I both know, the writer's syndrome. Mm-hmm. And they're saying that, you know, that goes under that tent as well of, you know, a reactive arthritic condition. But there's a lot of stuff out there. I got into the American College of Rheumatology site, and they had some things to say. Most of the stuff, as you know, I look at quizzically, and I don't necessarily agree with, because they're looking at symptoms and not why is that. But the interesting piece right now is there's so much that's coming out as a result of this craziness we just went through that is explaining some other pieces of the puzzle that I was suspicious of, but really wasn't sure that that was the case. You know, so, you know, when you talk about writer's syndrome, and they're talking about this things that is like a spondylitis. And we got a minute or two. What's a spondylitis opposed to other things that we're touching upon?
Yeah, so a spondylitic change is almost like a cascade. Visually, it looks like a waterfall. So you see it more commonly in the spine. People get what's called DISH, which is, it almost looks like candle wax, where one vertebrae, the arthritis is dripping down and touching the vertebrae below, and then it goes to the next one. And this is a relatively significant form of arthritis, and usually it causes tremendous restriction. In other words, the person just loses a lot of function. In most cases, when I find it, is it's incidental. The person might have a little bit of neck pain, and then you get an X-ray of them, and you just see that their whole spine is spondylitic. So they're high functional.
Hold the thought, Doc. We're coming up to a break. Unfortunately, I got to cut you short. We'll get right back into what we're talking about after some important message. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Dr. Tom Rozelle Live continues now on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Welcome back, everybody. Dr. Tom Rozelle here. You're listening to Dr. Tom Rozelle Live, as you do every Sunday. Listen, I have a very special guest, someone who excites me all the time just to be in his presence and to be able to co-teach with him this Wednesday evening, the 15th, will be a really fun time. Dr. Harlan Browning, the professor, as we lovingly call him, because he's got a wealth of knowledge and capacity that, you know, I'm like, oh my gosh, this guy is something else. Anyway, we're talking about arthritic problems, arthritic degeneration, or actually joint pain. For sometimes we don't know why, but it's there as well. So we're going to get into that a little bit more, and welcome him back, Dr. Browning. Welcome back to the program. Let's move further. We just talked a little about something that I learned more about during during COVID about arthritis, and that there was a triggering mechanism that took place because of all the vaccines, because of the exposure to viral elements, that they cause other viral elements to show up. And I think it's across the board. My opinion at this point is that it's the lowering of immunological function that may cause these things to activate, show up, grab a hold. You know, we can put a lot of different tags on it. And the people, as we know, that got themselves into real trouble during COVID, and unfortunately so many died, was because their immune system was lowered. People who had immunological strength, if you will, made it well. You know, you and I and people that ilk were, and we walked through it pretty decently. So let's talk about that. Well, let's go from if that's true type of situation and what they're observing. What would you think causes that to show up and cause the problem? Or you could disagree with it totally.
So, you know, to your point on that, we've known of this phenomenon. I guess they just now coined a term for it forever. So the classic example of this would be when we get the flu. Well, what happens when we get the flu? Well, you know, typically we get a cough or a fever, but very often we get joint and muscle pain. And the reason that happens is the body, as it tries to fight this virus, produces these chemical mediators called cytokines. And that was a big component of what was happening in COVID, is we would get these cytokine storms. And cytokines cause us to have inflammation and have pain, which is great on a short term. But if we get this huge cascade that overwhelms the immune system, then it can send us into a medical crisis like we saw in COVID. And certainly if we get this on a elongated or a greater timeline, then it can certainly explain people having, you know, chronic issues that defy diagnosis. Lyme disease would be the classic example. You know, the tests are not very good after the acute infection, but the person, it just progressively declines over time, years and years and years. So, so I think we've been talking about this. We just probably are developing a term for it now.
I think so. I think there's so much that's coming out that, and you know, I've got another piece of that in the back of my brain that says that it's too easy to give something to suppress the symptom instead of asking the question, why is it there to begin with? And you know me, I'm the guy that's going to go and I want to know why. I want to know why it shows up. I want to know what was the trigger, what happened to the patient, why the immune system is not working the way it's supposed to. And then more importantly, can it be reversed and can we get function back? I mean, when we talk about arthritis, arthritis is a joint space degradation, if you will, a degeneration or a loss of function. It's a narrowing of the buffering mechanism, the cartilage, as you were talking about, in the spine or joints or anyplace else. It doesn't happen to everyone under the same situations. The greatest majority, yes, but and in different levels. But the point of it is what sets the stage for this, Doc? What, why do they suffer immunological deficiencies, if you will, that should protect them their entire life if they did things properly?
Well, you know, some of the things that happen in the background that we don't really consider to be important would be conditioning. Number one, there's just a lot of people nowadays that are just not conditioned well. I mean, they just don't have great muscle strength. They don't have good flexibility. That's a big one. People walking around with lower levels of vitamin D, simple things to fix. You got to remember vitamin D is extremely important for immune function, extremely important for pain syndromes, and it has a huge effect on the ability for the body to form collagen and to strengthen tissues. And we can go on and on about the things that just the poor diet, bad gut function, just all of these things that we expose ourselves to. And each one's it's a death by a thousand cuts kind of routine. But we very often don't make the correlation between what we eat or what we do with our problem that might not show up for 20 years.
You know, it's interesting. You talk about vitamin D and, you know, people say, well, I get out in the sun. Well, the truth of it is that in this part of the world, even on a bright, bright day today, you know, if the sun was out there and so forth, you could go outside in shorts and midriff and short sleeve shirt, and you're not going to get the vitamin D that you need because of the angulation of the sun. It's not going to stimulate that pattern. But vitamin D, as we know, is necessary for bone absorption, calcium absorption in the bone. It's there to upregulate all kinds of immunological responses, but we do know that vitamin D directs the calcium input within the bones, along with K2 and other minerals and the like. And unfortunately, in our society, again, my opinion, based on coming up 46 years of practice in about a week, that people do not get what they need, but more importantly, they put things in their body that are causing inflammatory reactions. And I want to go back to the cytokine storm that you were talking about, because inflammation is important to heal things, but prolonged ongoing inflammatory responses, the interleukin-6 pathways and so forth, causes tremendous damage. Why are we seeing so much of that? I want to go back to that, because people are, the majority of society, as you said early on, virtually everybody will end up with some type of joint damage, but it doesn't mean they're going to have pain. It means that they've had a little wear and tear over a period of years. They've lived well. They've done a lot of things, but you mentioned activity level and you talked about, you know, other immune processes. Let's get a little deeper in that.
Yeah. So, you know, the background for our bodies certainly is getting the nutrients in that we need, properly digesting those nutrients, and then absorbing them. So there's a lot that can go wrong in that process. First and foremost, just most people just don't have a good quality diet. Simple things like staying hydrated is another thing. And then getting their hands on too many inflammatory type foods, the sugars, refined carbohydrates, artificial sweeteners, colorings, you know, stabilizers and all those types of things. And then, you know, lastly, there's just a lot of people that the environment inside their gut and their intestinal tract is not very favorable to absorbing or utilizing what they eat. So the end product is they just don't have the raw materials to build good quality tissue, cartilage being one of them.
You know, there was an interesting article that was, I can't remember when I read this, the craziness, but it came out of the British Medical Journal. I think it goes back almost about 8-9 years now when I first saw it. And it talked about rheumatoid arthritis and, that, you know, there was a relationship, that had to do with arginine and citrulline, which are nitric oxide formers. And what, if I can remember it, I'm sitting here, I'm actually trying to find it as we're talking. But what it said is that the active levels, if I remember, of, citrulline and arginine, had a facilitating effect. It upregulated, if you will, myeloperoxidase. And I think the other one was the neutrophil formations and the white blood cell counts. So when you look at that, and if, you know, if there's perhaps a deficiency in those areas, you're going to see things like degenerative disease. So let's take that another step forward. And here's the correlation that went on in my brain. We know that the body, all the arterial beds in the body, guys end up with erectile dysfunction because they don't have enough nitric oxide. We know that two of the things that are very supportive of that are going to be high levels of arginine and citrulline. And so the transfer of that. So if that is at low level, then there has to be an equilibrium. Here's where I'm going with the question I have for you. If they get too high, if citrulline gets too high, and we end up with, you know, that imbalance, or arginine getting too high, can we end up with tissue breakdown called necrosis? Your thought process. I'm just asking you your ideas on that.
You know, certainly with nitric oxide, it increases the perfusion of blood and ultimately oxygen and glucose. So, you know, it could certainly feed into this whole process, but I think it would be wiser to look at the bigger picture, as far as, you know, what's going on in the body. And as you referenced, the immune system, for the most part, when people have these chronic inflammatory type conditions, they have an out of control immune response, meaning that white blood cells that are designed to just basically pick up trash and clean things up are actively scavenging the body to look for tissue to literally eat. And unfortunately, that might be healthy tissue. So the more that we can do to buffer the response of the immune system and kind of get it back into the center section, is really important. So nitric oxide might be one of those things that you would try to stimulate to get that response as far as getting the immune system calmed down.
You know, the interesting correlation, here's where my head goes with things like this. You know, we're talking about nitric oxide formation in the natural world and stuff that I've given patients forever, citrulline and arginine, you know, for cardiovascular problems, but also for any kind of hormonal dysfunction, you know, the desire is there, but the equipment's not working, so to speak, with ED problems. But what I've noticed is some guys who have been on Viagra, which is Cetaphil. Cetaphil first came out as a nitric oxide former for the heart. And they noticed that there were other issues that were positive, and that's where the industry came from. But if you look in the literature, high levels or chronic use of too much of Cetaphil or Viagra can cause joint space problems. And that's one of the side effects. They put it down there as maybe not as much, but depends on where you go and look at the literature, whether it's in the United States or whether it's across the sea in Germany and England and so forth. It can cause a reversal effect than what it's trying to do. So there's a balancing act here someplace. But I was just curious, as I go through and I look at the literature and I try to put it together, is that, you know, what have you seen that way? Perhaps something, perhaps nothing. There's, like I said, this world that we're in right now with post-COVID, there's a lot of data coming out and it's got my attention. So I'm trying to put it together to help our patients and to be able to move. So let's get back. Let's touch upon osteoarthritis. We've got a few minutes that we can get into this a little bit more. When somebody has osteodegeneration, my brain always goes to, it ain't just wear and tear, so to speak. You know, osteoarthritis, arthritis of the joint space, as we began to touch, there's so many different reasons for it. It can affect the hands, can be overuse. You know, I've got on my right hand, I've got two joints that I smashed up playing ball when I was a kid, and it's still there. It doesn't hurt because I keep moving them, and I keep, you know, making sure that they're mobile and so forth. Can an osteoarthritic condition, or something that has said, well, you got arthritis, you take an x-ray of the neck, you got arthritis, you have x-ray of the low back, you have arthritis. We're in the world of joint mobilization and muscle balancing and so forth. Can those things be affected positively by structural motion manipulation, allowing joint spaces to restore and renew, perhaps in conjunction with the proper nutrition?
Yeah, so that, the answer to that is absolutely. Now, I think the one takeaway that I like my patients to know is, you know, once that arthritis is there, our goal isn't necessarily to make it disappear or break it up. It's to prevent it from progressing. And the more important component is to improve the mobility and the integrity of the joint. There are lots of folks walking around with significant amounts of arthritis that are very high functional. Their complaint might be they're just a little bit stiff. So they don't have any impairment. And that's a biggie. That really determines when a person really should get that hip replacement or knee replacement, when the joint is so destabilized that the person has a tremendous impairment. Now, the good thing is most folks that I come in contact with, and I'm sure that you do, we catch them a little bit before that happens. Now, there's that stubborn 64-year-old guy that's about the classic age and time frame who doesn't do anything about it until the wife nags him, and then he finally shows up into the office and they're completely bone on bone. That's a little bit tougher, but for the majority of people, if they don't have impairment, they are relatively stable. Without a doubt, you can improve that scenario and point them in a different direction.
You know, one of the things that I'll touch upon on our presentation, Wesley, and I will talk, and I'll do it just for a couple of minutes. Obviously, when you get to that scenario, there's also distinguishing features, which I've learned a lot about, as we all know. You know, do you say, oh my God, you're bone on bone. Do you need a total hip? If it's not bone destruction, there's much that can be done, from stem cells to PRP to, cartilage enhancers and so forth that can restore things, whether it's the hip or the knee or, and so forth. But you get to a place where now you have bone damage, you have destruction, and it's impossible to restore that. God knows I tried. And now you've got to make a decision. Is it a total hip, or is it something that's called a hip resurfacing, which keeps you in a good place? And I'll talk about that when Wednesday evening and what happened to me and how I made that decision. But I'm one of those stubborn guys that you just talked about.
Absolutely. You are the poster child of what I just talked about.
I figured that you were bringing it up for a reason.
So, well, sort of, yes.
So, but at the end of the day, you know, I did everything that I could possibly do to fix it, but I started too late, and I got through it, and it cost me about 3 years of productivity. But nevertheless, we'll tell you what the deal is going through. We're at that break. We've got to come back in a couple of minutes, and we'll tell you what we're going to be doing Wednesday evening. We'll be right back.
News Talk 105.9.
WMAL.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Dr. Tom Rozelle. You listen to Dr. Tom Rozelle live as you do every Sunday on the Eastern Seaboard. You know the drill. Those of you out in California, thank you very much. And again, I want to make sure that I acknowledge and thank our men and women in service who allow us to do this program on an ongoing basis. I appreciate you. And if there's anything I can ever do for you personally, anything at all, please reach out. You can get a hold of me at rozellecare.com and just send me a note, and I promise I will get back to you. Dr. Harlan Browning is my guest today and my co-host this Wednesday evening, the 15th, at the Result Center for Healing. We're going to be talking about arthritic problems of all kinds and sorts and immunological responses and what you can deal with and so forth. Before we get in and wrap the program up, I want to take a couple minutes because there's somebody that's been waiting patiently to tell us a story about her reactive arthritis. Marcia, are you there?
Yes. All right. I'll try to make this really quick. So when I'm in my mid-40s now, and when I was in my early 20s, I decided to get on the birth control pill for my acne. And that started feeling bad after I started taking it. So after I wasn't on it probably for like a couple weeks, and I actually developed reactive arthritis. And I always pinpoint that to taking the birth control pill because I was very healthy. I never had any issues until then. And it lasted for a couple months. So I pretty much went to an arthritis doctor, and they told me I had reactive arthritis. And my doctor kept testing my blood and kept saying, your SED rates are so high, which means a lot of inflammation. I had to take off work for a couple months because I was, like, so much pain. I had constant yep. low-grade fevers. So it's like it gradually came on, and then I did stop the birth control right away when I start feeling bad. And then it just, like, after a couple months, it went away, and then I haven't had any – I'm in my mid-40s and haven't had any joint pain since then. So I always pinpoint that birth control to activate that.
Yeah, the disruption of the hormonal balance as a result of the birth control pill. Dr. Browning, do you want to comment on that? Any kind of hormonal dysregulation like that can cause a problem.
Yeah, definitely. You know, when we start to try to change the way our hormones are functioning, it's fair game for the body to fight back. And in some cases, you can have these reactive situations where you just produce lots of inflammation to try to quell the change in the hormone production.
Yeah, it's, you know, when we're dealing with any kind of hormone dysregulation, we're talking about multiple systems. We're talking about the adrenal system. That's our fail-safe when it comes to estrogens and progesterones and testosterones and so forth. Also, it produces many different types of steroids, are steroids that we need to protect our joint spaces. And that's probably one of the triggering mechanisms that took place. Also, there are a woman, if she's on birth control pills, high levels of estrogen is going to trigger high levels of mold and yeast infections and so forth. And the side effect of that is called something called aldehyde. And that's an alcohol. And the residuals of that can cause problems within the body. So you can get into that real deep, why it took place. The great news is that she was able to get through it and she's in a better place now, but that's not an unusual situation. Doc, we've got a couple minutes. Let's talk about what we're going to go back and forth with. Where do you want to go with us Wednesday night?
You know, I think we're going to touch a lot of topics that have to do with just chronic joint pain. Some of that's going to be arthritic in nature, be it osteoarthritis or inflammatory arthritis. But I know I want to touch on a lot of things that mimic primary arthritis. In other words, things that make you think that it's just old school osteoarthritis when in fact it's something else. And, you know, we'll look at a lot of the mechanisms behind it and ultimately come up with some conservative ways to treat it. That's what we do, right? We take somewhat complex problems, we try to simplify it, and we try to come up with an answer that is conservative in nature, and it doesn't really involve continuing to take, you know, pills and consider surgery and all those types of things.
Yeah, that's our job. That's what we do. That's, you know, why we get results where in some cases other people don't get the results that they should have and deserve. The body is an amazing machine. If you understand it properly, if you understand why it breaks down, it's good to go. We're coming up to that place where we're going to have to say, hey, listen, we'll see you next week. It's a pleasure serving you. We'll be right back next week. We love you all.